Hot stove keeps burning this offseason. Orioles, are they going to make any other moves this offseason? Let's bring on someone who knows what's going on in the world of baseball. Former executive, now with MLB Radio, also The Athletic. It's Jim Bowden, who joins us courtesy of the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. And Jim, thanks as always for your time. We appreciate it. So what do you think of this Orioles offseason thus far?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's been solid is the best way I guess I could describe it. Am I a little disappointed they didn't do more? Yeah, I am. And I'm going to tell you why I'm disappointed, because I feel like this is their window to win a World Series. And I feel like, you know, you got to go big or go home when you get this close, and you got to make the moves that are painful. And I don't think we should underestimate the loss of Corbin Burnes, a number one starter, an ace. I don't think you can overlook losing Anthony Santander, not just the 44 homers, but solid guy in the clubhouse, a guy that's been hitting two or three in that lineup and been a key the last several years. I mean, those are two huge losses. So, you know, do I hate the moves they did make? No. I mean, they were very conservative, which I get. Charlie Morton, 1 year, $15 million. I think he has enough to still pitch. The stuff is still there. He's no longer a one or a two. He's more like a four or a five, but he's still solid, you know, if he can stay healthy. I like the gamble on Sagano, Tommy Yuke, because, you know, this guy knows how to pitch. I don't know how it's going to translate here. I know he doesn't miss a lot of bats, but he does know how to pitch. He adds, subtracts, he hits the black. I'm really intrigued by seeing him. So those are conservative moves. You know, they committed $28 million this year on those two guys alone. Is that a better investment than having Santander? Is that a better investment than bringing Burnes back at a similar number?
No.
I know they didn't want to put the long term on the books, but there's no guarantee the Orioles can extend Rutschman and Henderson to those 10-15 year deals everybody else is. So I kind of feel like you should win while you have them. So I didn't love it. Tyler O'Neill, I know they needed right-handed power, and he brings that. But this is a guy that never plays. Look at his career. It's only twice that he's played his whole career. And 3 years at almost $50 million for a guy that spends more time on the IL, I didn't love that. Gary Sanchez, I can't stand him behind the plate. The pass balls drive me nuts. The right-hand power, DHing against left-hand pitching, okay, I can buy into that as a piece. And Kittredge should help the bullpen. But, I mean, is that enough to win the World Series when the Yankees go get Max Fried and Devin Williams and Cody Bellinger and Paul Goldschmidt?
Yeah.
Does that really move the needle? It doesn't for me. And the Red Sox are getting a lot better quicker because of their farm system, which is better than the Orioles' farm system. So I find it solid but disappointing, if you understand what I mean.
No, totally. And so I'm going to ask you a different variation of a question I've asked you before. Is the human element lacking in that no spreadsheet, no group of quants, no algorithms going to tell you when it's time to go balls out to try to win a World Series? Like, they're not going to tell you when the odds are really bleak that Boris is signing any of his guys here. So the future is now. It's not 2027. Like, they're not, you know what I mean? Like that stuff, like, who's doing that here? Because I don't think anybody's doing that here. And it seems to me they have no ambition outside of doing the things they've always done. Am I crazy?
That's what we're seeing. But that's what we're seeing. Those are just facts. You're just repeating what you're seeing. And I'm seeing the same thing. And the message I would have for Seattle and Baltimore, I mean, look, I sat for decades in front offices, and I was a GM for parts of 17 years. I know when you spend and when you don't spend. When you have a chance to win, you go, because the window's going to close quicker than you think. And as much as everyone would like to think that Rutschman's staying forever and Gunner's staying forever, I mean, the truth of the matter is Boris takes his clients to free agency, and when you get there, you know, Juan Soto tells you what it can look like.
Yeah.
And if you haven't signed him by now, it's going to get harder and harder every single year. And the fact they haven't signed either one of those guys this offseason, that's a really bad sign.
Yeah.
And so now the real possibility of having to trade them in a couple of years all of a sudden is sitting in front of your face like, OMG, it could actually happen. So I am in the same school you are, and the message that I would be given to the Orioles ownership or Seattle's ownership, who, you know, they've got a top four starting rotation in baseball, and they don't have the offense to win. I mean, what are you waiting for? Like, this is your window for both of those teams. If you want to win a world championship, It's these next several years where you can do it. And as an owner, this is where you overspend and take your loss. You don't break even. Most owners like to break even, right? They spend what they have and they put it back in the team. What you have to know as an owner is there are certain years where you overspend and you lose 15, 20 million with a whole idea of if we win or when we win, we know at some point we're going to have to completely cut back and make up for that loss. But when you win, you'd be amazed at what the revenue stream does. And all of a sudden, you have more money to do more things. And that's where, to your point, the spreadsheets and the algorithms don't ever tell the story. You need an owner that gets it. And I'm sorry, the guy in Arizona gets it.
Yes.
When Ken Kendrick went out and got Greinke several years ago, he got it. He understood it. When he made the move for Burns this offseason, he gets his window. He understands it right here, right now. And my feeling from afar is that Baltimore and Seattle aren't seeing that, and they're going to regret it. They're going to regret it. When we get to 2028, they're going to look back and say, boy, we really screwed up our opportunity, didn't we?
Well, I think I know where you're going to go with this question, Jim, but are you expecting one more swing out of Mike Elias? I mean, they don't have that top-of-the-line pitcher. We Cease, Castillo, invest more into the bullpen.
Could you make Profar fit, or does O'Neill kill that?
I think O'Neill kills that.
Yeah.
You know, I would just keep adding pitch. I think you have the position players to mix and match to win. I do. I would just focus every day, every breath, trying to just keep adding pitching. And the higher quality, the better. You're in a tough division, and it ain't going to get any better, right? I mean, Boston, I'm telling you, they're going to, you know, and now they may end up getting Bregman, and that's going to be another piece that's scary for them. And the Yankees are a better team now than we saw last year, at least for the 162 games. I'm not going to argue in October, and they're going to miss Soto, obviously. But to get there and win more regular season games, they're a better team with Fried and Williams. They're a better team. They are. That pitching is way better. So, you know, let's take a deep breath and let's hope that Mike Elias keeps grinding here, because there's time. You know, it doesn't matter that what's been done to this date. Your farm system still has the pieces that it takes to make the trades, to get more pitching. And let's just hope his obsession just keeps building and keeps coming, because the window is here and it's real.
We're talking to Jim Bowden. It's Inside Access here on The Fan. Jim, what frustrates me about this whole situation is I thought that new ownership was supposed to open doors that weren't available to them before. And let's be honest, the Tyler O'Neill deal, if he's good this year, he's going to opt out. So it's a one-year deal, and everything else is a one-year deal. They have not given a long-term deal to anyone since Alex Cobb, and that was when Peter was still running the team. So there's just something seems to be missing here.
Well, you'll be happy if Tyler O'Neill opts out, is all I'm going to say.
Yes, right. I hear you.
Oh, I hear you.
Yeah, you're going to be happy if that happens.
Yeah.
All these moves they're making short-term, look, short-term moves never bother me. The money comes off the books. I'm not stuck with a bad contract. If Morton is too old, who cares? It's 1 year. If Sagano can't get people out, that doesn't bother me. What does bother me is not going for it here and not making more of an impact. But again, there's time. And I know he wants to hold on to all the prospects. I know he wants to keep Mayo and Bradfield and Holiday. And I get that. I 100% get it. But by waiting, you've now lost the value of Kerstad, as an example.
Yep.
If you wait another year, you might lose the value of Bradfield or Mayo.
Yep.
And so to me, you got to hit it while the value is still there in people's minds. Everybody wants those inexpensive players. So you've got not a lot of teams have those pieces they can trade to go get them. I mean, look what San Diego's done the last few years. Here's Dylan Cease. Here's Luis Arraez. And they were the second-best team in baseball last year. And it's because A.J. was aggressive and went for it. Now, did they win a World Series? No. But if you talk to most baseball people, they were the second-best team of the Dodgers last year, not the Yankees. So, you know, to me, the window's there. I don't care that this offseason's been solid, not great. That doesn't bother me. There's plenty of time to make an impactful trade or two. And that's what I'm hoping that Mike Elias does.
Do you think that the Burns 1 year and then walking would have any impact on how much he'd be willing to pay for Cease? Or and even to take it a step further, Like, yes, that makes them absolutely better, but that's still just another one-year proposition. That's like another one-year deal. Is that enough?
I think the problem is he did such a good job on the Burns deal that mm-hmm. he's expecting that AJ Preller is going to make the same kind of deal for season. He's not.
He's not going to do it. Yeah.
And so you kind of feel like when you're a GM, well, look what I gave up for Burns. I'll give up the same thing for Cease, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that sounds good, right? But you know, I wouldn't have given you Burns for Ortiz and Hall. Right. I wouldn't have done it. And AJ of all people isn't going to sit there and make a deal like that. He's not going to make a bad deal. If you want Cease, you can get Cease.
Yeah.
But it's going to hurt. And by the way, if you want to win, you got to make those deals that hurt. You just do.
Jim Bowden, always great, sir.
Thank you, sir.
So much for your time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Nice talking to you guys. Thank you.
Bye.
Hey, coming up next,
I'm going to make a prediction. He'll never call Mike Elias the best GM in baseball again on our airwaves. I don't think that's ever going to happen again. I don't think we have to worry about that.
Do you know what's weird? I don't want to speak for him. He almost sounded disappointed.
Well, yeah, because the guy's proven to be a fraud. The guy sold everybody a bag of goods. I stopped believing it a long time ago. A lot of people didn't. No. I told you he was a fraud long ago.
No, but my point is he doesn't sound mad. He sounds like a father who's disappointed in his son.
The guy has no feel for the job. He has no feel for the job as a contending general manager.
Hey,
zilch.
I think we should hear from Eric DaCosta here because we really haven't heard from him. Yeah, so let's hear from the general manager. He spoke at the press conference today. We hear from him next here on The Fan.
No, we haven't had those discussions yet. His agent's a good friend of mine. And, you know, I think Pat knows how we feel about him. And I would love for him to retire as a Raven, too. I mean, he epitomizes everything that we're all about. And he's another undrafted guy who just became, in my opinion, the best at his position. So, you know, we'll have those discussions. This is not the first time that he's been a free agent. And so I think he's signed at least two deals with us after his rookie deal. So this is probably his fourth contract now with us if we can get him signed. And I would say that would be the goal.
Much different message there than when he was talking about Brandon Stevens earlier. It sounds pretty much to me that Patrick Ricard will be in a Ravens uniform next year.
Yeah. He's speaking about agent Buddy Baker.
Yeah.
Good friend of mine as well.
Good dude.
I like Buddy a lot. I've hung out with Buddy many times, either here or in Indianapolis or in New York or even Florida once or twice.
It seems like a layup for this.
You can't
get
that done.
I mean, we're talking about a fullback where not many teams even use them anymore, and the type of success that they have with Patrick Ricard on the field and in this rushing attack and even the passing attack.
And call me crazy,
too much sense.
There was more certainty even in that for me than even the way he spoke about Mark Andrews.
Yes. Well, you want to hear that?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. All right. A little out of order there, Beltway Ben, but cut 24, Eric on Mark Andrews.
Yeah, I agree with John. And Mark and I have communicated. I'll leave those thoughts to myself. But as far as Mark's contract goes, you know, he's no different than a lot of guys. In fact, I think all of our tight ends are in the last year of their contract coming up in 2025. So, you know, we'll have some decisions to make moving forward. Not as many, I think, you know, tough decisions this year looking at it, which I'm thankful for. But obviously, as we look out, we'll have some tough decisions after next season. So a year from now, we'll have some tough choices and decisions to make regarding players. But yeah, so that room right now, all three of those guys are in the last year of their deals. Ironically, Charlie and Isaiah and Mark, we're blessed to have, in my opinion, the best tight ends room in the league. And we'll be blessed this year on the field as well.
Interesting. You didn't talk about best friend agents and getting multiple deals done. He kind of pivoted from
that. He broadened it out to the whole room and the strength of that position group.
Yes.
Which, again, if I'm reading that, I'm saying, well, how much worse would it be with one of those guys paid Andrews money and somebody else in? I mean, they're never going to tell you,
no,
we want to trade this guy, we want to trade that guy, we think it's time to give that guy's money to this guy.
But they
know what this city's been on fire since Sunday night, right, about what the hell's up with Mark Andrews. And he did nothing himself to put it out. He threw gasoline on it by being a conscientious objector to address it. And then the GM says, I'm not going to tell you what I talked to him about, but we know he's going into the last year of his deal. And if he doesn't get an extension, he's not going to be doing cartwheels about that. Nobody ever is when they're guaranteed money's up. And then he's taking this question about Andrews and broadening it out to the whole group.
He had the opportunity to unequivocally come out and say Mark Andrews is going to be a part of this football team in 2025.
And it wouldn't seem like that would be that hard to say for a guy who's already under contract.
Yeah.
Like, hey, guys, Mark's going to be here next year and whatever.
That was not said.
No.
No. Cut 21, Ben. Eric.
Just one other thing, too. Like, when he says I'm not going to... Like, there's no fool out there that could possibly think that they don't understand what people have been talking about. Like, they know that one of the faces of the franchise had a horrific playoff game that ended their season and then went underground for 2 days.
Yes.
They know that.
They're aware.
So when he comes out and says, well, I've talked to him, but I'm not going to tell you what it's about. If that was an overtly great conversation, then you're an idiot for not saying that. And by handling it the way you did, it doesn't mean somebody's a conspiracy theorist if they're like, that's an odd way to address it under the circumstances. Because that's an odd way to address it under the circumstances.
One more from Eric DeCosta before we step out. It's a question I asked him, and it was about Kyle Hamilton. And do they prefer to have him where he was over a year ago? And would they like to add a safety this offseason?
Well, we'll look at that. I mean, I think we definitely saw a different type of performance from Kyle this year. But, I mean, if you look at overall how our defense blossomed with him back there, I think it was worthwhile. Did he make as many splash plays? Probably not. But I'd take the improvement in the defense rather than Kyle making splash plays and us not being very good on defense. So, you know, if we can add another safety, you know, obviously it would be really good for us. Gives us that, you know, multiplicity on defense and the ability to do a lot of different things. Kyle becomes that sort of jackknife again. But listen, we're blessed to have Kyle and Ardarius back there. We've got good young corners with Marlon. You know, I think we'll see, hopefully. I mean, I would anticipate our secondary is going to play like they did over the last 8, 9, 10 games of the season next year. And that's a comforting thing. I am actually ironically looking at a safety upstairs right now in the draft. So, you know, no, but we'll go through it and we'll look at all the players and we'll rank the board like we always do. And if the best guy is a free safety at that pick, then we'll take him. We'll be very happy with it.
Sounds to me like they'd like to put Kyle Hamilton back at where he was a year ago.
I mean, again, we're talking about trying to scramble back to respectability by making the dramatic and desperate changes you had to make because the first 10 games were so bad. But that's not the standard. That's not the expectation. That's a hard way to win a Super Bowl or come all that close to it. So they've now had an opportunity. You learn from this. You've had an opportunity to see this in different ways. And where you ended up with Kyle Hamilton this year was not the trajectory we thought he was on had McDonald not become a head coach somewhere else. Now they've got to get a little closer to where that McDonald standard was set 2 years ago.
Inside Access here on a Wednesday. Coming up next, season's over for the Ravens. What did Mark Viviano think about the end of that Ravens season? He, of course, IA Hall of Famer, former sports director, Channel 13, joins us next. And it is our pleasure to go out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline, where we talk to our friend, IA Hall of Famer, former sports director at WJZ Channel 13, Mark Viviano, joins us now. And Viv, always a pleasure talking to you. We appreciate your time. So I guess, first and foremost, your reaction to Sunday evening.
Been there, seen this. It's tough. You know, it was notable that John Harbaugh came out just minutes after this loss and was quick to point out that you shouldn't draw any cosmic thread to connect the Ravens' playoff losses over the last 7 years. Of course, that's the Lamar Jackson era. 6 of those 7 years, they've made it to the playoffs. One of those years, of course, Lamar was hurt. But they've been the higher seed. They've been the favored team. They've had an MVP quarterback for probably now. This will be the third season. They've had more Pro Bowl talent than any team. They got 5 guys on the roster with $100 million contracts. They are a consistently good regular season team, but a consistently disappointing playoff team. That's not a cosmic thread. That's just kind of the fact of things. And there are a couple of avenues that you can travel when you're trying to analyzing what happened or what has happened. And I think, first of all, there's parts of this that are obvious and statistically evident, and that's the turnovers. Lamar Jackson and the Ravens are turnover averse in the regular season. This last year, historically good at avoiding turnovers, but they're turnover prone in their playoff losses. That's just a reality that they have to face. Another part about this that is obvious and statistically evident, you got to remember the competition. It changes dramatically from the regular season where you have 32 teams, each playing 17 games, and the bad franchises are predictably bad. And the good ones, which the Ravens are predictably good. They are expected to be a playoff team. And more times than not, as we've noted, they are. But once you get to January, you don't face Tommy DeVito or Bailey Zappi. You face other real good teams. And of those 14 teams that do make the playoffs, in my estimation, less than half of them are legit Super Bowl contenders. So you have compressed the competition significantly. And the Ravens are part of that compressed competition, which leads to the other part of looking at postseasons in sports and in the NFL in particular, that there are elements of, you could say, small sample luck, unaccountable circumstances because of a single win or go home situation. You know, Major League Baseball, it's noted every year they play 162 games over 6 months. And as the Orioles have found out the last 2 years, it can be over in 3 days. It's done. Everything that you accomplished that was so exciting and good, when the competition changes and is compressed into the best only, the best shine. And the Ravens have not. And there's another element to this that you cannot statistically measure this at all, but it's a human nature. And you guys have heard the exercise before, where you get a 3x4 plank of wood and you put it on the ground and you tell somebody walk across it and they can do it easily. That's the regular season. Raise it up 15 feet and say, now walk across it. Human nature is your fear of the consequences of failure. And what that does to somebody who could walk across it easily before now has to consider the consequences of failure. I'm not saying that the Ravens have folded under that pressure. I'm not saying that, you know, individually or coaches or collectively that they, I don't like the word choke, and I don't believe they have. I think they're well prepared and they put their best forward, but I think the competition is another level that requires a greater constitution in those key moments, moments in which every decision matters more. Every mistake is magnified. Every turnover, as we can note historically for all these teams, changes their fortunes. Every call by an official, good or bad, is more highly scrutinized and could be the reason you win or you lose. And I talked about luck. I mean, Joe Flacco said it himself. When he chucked up that pass to Jacoby Jones and Raheem Moore fell down, they got lucky. I mean, counts. That's part of it. In this condensed and compressed competition, it just stands out all the more. And the Ravens went on the road that year, and Joe Flacco didn't throw a single interception in those four playoff games, including the Super Bowl. And they won on the road at Denver, and they won on the road at New England, and they beat San Francisco. That's the kind of magic carpet you got to ride. Now, I say, you know, there's luck involved. There is. Yet, there are teams like Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs will be playing in their seventh straight AFC championship game. And there's Tom Brady and those Patriots who were in the Super Bowl every other year. Like, that's not luck. Maybe there are elements of luck in any individual independent game, because that's sports. But sometimes you're bigger than the luck in the compressed competition, and to prove it over years is what makes them so remarkable and what makes Ravens fans so frustrated that they have such a good team that, when involved in this compressed highest level of competition, can't get to the big game.
So let's pivot that to the micro level with Mark Andrews, where we now have, I mean, were we talking 8 or 9 playoff games? That's a pretty good sample size. And he's not the same guy in the postseason as he is in the regular season. And that's taking the drops from this game out of it. You know, I mean, his EPA per target is nowhere near it. 20% drop rate, his playoff career, 4.9. Regular season, 42.5 success rate in the playoffs, 56.3 regular season. Then there's the no touchdowns, and there's the first down rate, which is way off. And that's with Lamar. That's taking the snoop out of it. Do they have to factor stuff like that in? Like, does that have to now become part of the barometer because of everything you just said of how tough it is to get over this, and certain guys have not helped them there despite having such a critical role in all these games?
You know, as we sit here just a couple of days after that performance and that loss and that disappointment and that performance by Mark Andrews, which you note, you know, is not a first-time postseason occurrence, still, you know, and I've asked Eric DaCosta about this. I remember asking Tony Dungy about this. When you get to the postseason, yes, there is that element of, yeah, this is where they shine. I mean, Belichick said it every year, you know. I don't care what you did in the regular season. Can you be the best with the seasons on the line? And obviously he got his guys to believe they could, and he had good players, and they did. You still got to be good in the regular season to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, because what Mark Andrews does in the regular season, if you know, we'll draw the line from the postseason and the regular season. In the regular season, he's one of the best players the Ravens have ever had. He's scored more touchdowns than any of them in their history. Is his postseason questionable in terms of performance that is such a drop-off from the regular season? Yes, it is. I mean, you got a point, but I don't know if that means you depart from that player and sacrifice whatever it is he could give you in a regular season with still hope that next postseason he'll be better. Heck, next postseason, Lamar Jackson hopefully won't fumble or throw an interception. And I'm not laying this at the feet of Lamar Jackson. He is the most important player on that team. But he proved this year in the regular season and in the second half of the Buffalo game, he's that good. I mean, I don't think anybody's questioned that, and he has progressed. But they all are accountable. Every single one of them are accountable for the outcome. But, yeah, I understand the frustration. I understand the question.
Viv, I did want to get your thoughts on Mark Andrews not talking to the media immediately following the game and the day after during locker room cleanout. You've covered ton of tough losses for teams in this town. You know Mark Andrews from covering from when he was drafted here. Just your thoughts on him not meeting with the media.
It seems unlike him. As I know Mark, I knew Mark when I covered him regularly. I guess the pain and the disappointment and, you know, whatever, if you want to call an embarrassment, whatever it is that he felt, moved him in such a manner as to decide he wasn't going to, didn't want to, or didn't think it was best what he might say or how he might feel. I don't know. I can't say. I'm sorry that he took that tack because it hasn't helped him in any kind of explanation. I wouldn't be surprised if he comes out with a statement, you know, or something, just thanking people for supporting him during a difficult time, because there's been a lot of support there. I saw even Jim Palmer mention something about, you know, his, you know, difficulty that Jim had as a Hall of Fame player in bouncing back to win a World Series the next year. So the support's there. I think everybody feels for anybody who suffers being the GOAT in a negative sense in a particular situation. I am sorry he didn't talk. I really am, because I like Mark, and I don't know if that was probably – it was obviously his decision, and I'm sorry he made that decision.
Viv, always great, man.
Thank you, sir.
So much for your time, as always, sir.
Always listening, guys. You take care, and we'll talk again sometime.
Thanks so much, buddy. We go from that to total nonsense. Is Bone In, Bone Out next here on The Fan.
I watched The Godfather last night.
Oh!
Nice.
I'm bone in on The Godfather. It was an awesome movie, even though it was 3 hours, and I feel like no movie should be long.
How do you shorten that movie? It's great.
It is phenomenal, and I'm watching Godfather 2 on Friday, but I'm bone in on The Godfather.
By the way, I'm bone in on Godfather 2 being better than The Godfather, so. But I love The Godfather.
So, we're going to go with an Italian theme because of watching The Godfather. I'm bone in on cannolis. I love cannolis.
It's like bone in on sunshine. Who doesn't like cannolis? There's an anti-cannoli contingent.
I like them, but I don't need them. I like them. They're desserts I like better.
There's people who you're not bone out. To be bone out on something is to be opposed to it.
No,
who's anti-cannoli?
I will say, speaking of Italian desserts, I'm bone out on tiramisu.
Really?
That's odd.
Because I don't like anything coffee.
That's on my list.
I don't like the flavor coffee.
How many chances have you given tiramisu?
A couple, and it tastes
not
like
enough.
How recently? Were you a child with childish taste?
No, it's probably 10 years ago was the last time.
Back when you were chopping up cheesesteaks?
I'm really bone in on pretty much all Italian food, but gelato. I mean, come on. Gelato is probably better.
I love gelato, but I'm not taking gelato over a cannoli or over tiramisu. If I'm going to splurge on something fattening,
so you're
I'm
saying
not going
cannoli,
gelato.
Cannoli's a
cannoli's
top
pretty far up there for me.
I will say this. Have you had real Italian gelato in Italy?
No,
he's been to Italy. You know he hasn't been outside the country.
I have not been to Italy.
I've
been
Italian
to Vaccaro's.
Oh, that's close.
It's pretty good.
It's close enough.
Yeah. Yes. That's little Italy.
Have had their gelato, and it's fantastic.
No, I mean, gelato's great.
The reed's going again.
I like it.
Bone in on bruschetta. I love bruschetta as well.
I mean, again, I guess there are people who hate tomatoes, so I could see that they're out on bruschetta, but I find this to be the least controversial bone in, bone out.
Give me
all
something
time
with raisins,
but
I'll go out.
That's the thing. I was going Italian theme because of The Godfather, and if you don't like Italian food, it's on you. That's the issue.
There are some things Italian that
we could start talking squid. Like that, there's going to be multiple sides
to
that debate.
I'm going to be bone out on that. Yes.
Really?
I am bone out on squid.
I like calamari.
No, calamari stinks.
I love calamari.
About like a nice grilled squid?
It's okay.
No. I'm down. I'm totally down.
I don't like squid.
Now, are you picky about the calamari? Because some of my kids will eat the calamari, but they don't like the part that looks like it's got the octopus stuff.
I like that.
I like that too.
Yeah, I dip that
with the legs in it.
Yeah, I dip that bad boy in that marinara.
You know what else is great? Eel.
I've never really had eel.
I'm bone out on eel.
Eel's a dude. Don't knock it till you try it.
Well, I guess that's something because they're in a lot.
I thought
of
you
pasta.
Like sushi.
I don't like.
I
sushi.
I do like sushi, but that's kind of different.
What do you mean?
There's more stuff involved, and I'll put some wasabi on top of it to kind of.
You can still do that with the eel.
I like wasabi.
You got to, dude. I wouldn't steer you wrong. It's not fishy at all. The eel is amazing. It's amazing. I never had it. I never had sushi until I went to Japan for the Nagano Olympics, and then
that's a different level.
And then you go out and you're hammered, and then it's like, yeah, I'll try anything. And then I'm like, oh my God, this eel's amazing. I bet it would be great sober too. It absolutely is.
The first time I had sushi was when I went to the DR, and it was an all-inclusive thing.
Yeah, sushi.
All you can eat sushi is not like that should be a deal breaker.
No,
I'm bone out. I'm bone out on all you can eat sushi.
No, I am bone in on one in, I believe it's in Glen Burnie. I won't say the name, but dude, phenomenal. All you can eat sushi, and they give you all the extras.
I just don't. I want to feel like it's not. There's not a never ending supply of it, and they're not just giving it away.
I guess
that's how I want to feel about my sushi.
I guess everybody's bone in on red wine, garlic bread, pasta.
I don't drink wine.
Italian.
I don't drink wine.
Not anymore. But back at, well, you drank white wine, right?
Probably. I would have drank green wine. Purple wine, I'll try it.
Yeah.
And another thing, My volleyball starts tonight, so I'm bone in on volleyball. Very bone in on volleyball.
You've put the band back together? It's the same team as last year?
It's a little bit. Well, we didn't do volleyball last year, which kind of upset me because I low-key like volleyball. It might be one of my favorite Volo sports.
Do they set the net at normal height, or is it a little lower so like more people can spike it?
No, I think it's normal.
Is it cup in hand?
And dude, I send it. Like, I'm going for a block. I'm going for a spike. That's why I'm here.
Are you cup in hand?
No, there's no cup in hand for volleyball.
Are you the person with the special jersey? Do they do that? Are you that person?
I don't know. I don't know. Like that. Dude, if you make your own jerseys, and a lot of people do, looking at you, Volo softball teams, if you make your own jerseys.
No, no. I mean the volleyball person who wears the different jersey. Who's like the center or whatever, the main person.
The Lala's something.
Libera.
Yes, Libera. Thank you, Ben. And it was love something. No.
They don't have that?
We're just wearing the Skittle shirts that you like.
We went and saw a volleyball at Towson one time.
Dude, volleyball is electric.
It's pretty damn good. I would
volleyball
definitely go back.
Volleyball is electric.
And it's fast. It's over in like 90 minutes. Well, I guess this was a sweep, though, so maybe it's not always that fast.
Yeah.
But it was cool. I liked it a lot. Volleyball. Gymnastics. Towson gymnastic meets are really cool. Well, I mean, I say Towson, like, it could be. I'm sure other schools gymnastics have it, too.
By the way, not for nothing, but Libera sounds like a drug that's advertised during the afternoon, like during the game shows. It helps cure Crohn's disease, but also causes you to bleed out of your eyeballs. But that
also sounds like a terrible program director.
Yeah. Coming up next, are the Chiefs going to three-peat? We're going to ask former Chiefs player, our friend Michael DeVito, next here on The Fan.